Falls the Rain Again. Written and read by Fresney. Fandom. The Highwayman's Song. The Campbell Version. And The Fortunes and Misfortunes of Moll Flanders.
I was a highwayman.
I was a sailor. I was a dam builder. I fly a starship. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain.
A single drop of rain. It is a slowly condensed birth, rain born of the warm, wet winds, from southern seas and sudden cloud-clung meetings with the old peaks that prickle down the center of the Green Island. High above those fulminating thunderheads, the schooner moon casts silver roads upon the atlas of the clouds. Having been born, a drop of rain falls with its siblings. A warm summer rain, such a long way the drop falls. The drop is tiny. Any height would be a long way. The drop dances with the others. They move with the laughter of being born. A gentle breeze lifts the drop up for a single quick updraft, and sideways, then down again. The single drop of rain splashes against a supple young leaf. The leaf sways at the sudden wet kiss. They shiver together. The drop slides ever so slowly down the sweet green spine of the leaf. The drop glides a caress before reaching the leaf's long curled tip. They cling together, reluctant to part, but gravity pulls the drop away. The drop splashes into the stream below.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
The Highwayman. The autumn of 24 found 16 strings Kit, so named for the 16 colorful strings he tied round the knees of his tight breeches of fine silk, lurking about by the old Roman bridge on the coach road twixt London and Bath. Now, he weren't in charge of this little venture, but a man needed to make his way, so he was along for the ride. Sure paid better than the light fingers and dangling purses.
Kit waited in a thick copse of woods, along a dip in the old Roman road. A slab of ancient stone lay wedged across a gossiping stream.
I couldn't help but think of the men who'd laid down the rocks for this road and bridge so long ago. There was a lot of water flowing under this here bridge. Wasn't much to do but think, while waiting for the London-bound coach to make its way. Blackheart Tully was crouched on the other side of the road. Just before the bridge, they'd laid out a tree on the road, all natural-like. He heard the coach before he saw it, rattling down the old road. The coach came down over the hill and slowed as well as they might. The coachman sawed at the reins, buggerin' fuck! The outrider shifted in his seat next to the coachman. Blackheart Tully stepped from behind his oak. Hand over what you got. Kit liked to be more gentlemanlike about his work. He cocked his pistol. Good evening, good sirs. No need for concern. A few bubbles lost, and we'll part as friends. He tilted back his French cocked hat with his brace of silk roses and grinned. No one got out of the coach. Blackheart Tully raised one of his pistols, and the mad bastard fired into the coach. Kit had no choice but raise his pistol higher. Well, mostly friends. The outrider cursed a blue stream, and the coachman struggled to control his horses. A motley enough group of travellers spilled out of the coach, now along with a couple of lawyer types, a bishop-looking fella, and his prune-faced wife. But old Moll spilled her way out with a sweet young miss with curling black hair under a starched linen cap clutched firmly in Moll's grip. Surely the lot of them were Moll's marks for the journey. The bishop fellow said, "Now see here, I'm a man of God." Blackheart Tully got with the gap tooth sneering. "Then you're used to charity." The pretty young miss buried her face against Moll's shoulder in a fetching sort of way. The young miss glanced back at Kit and licked her lips.
"I'm going to be ravished."
If the relish in her tone and the way Pruneface's expression shriveled up like an apple was any indication, the young miss was no stranger to a hard ride in a hay rick or two. Kit puffed up his chest to better show the fine lace at his throat and the cut of his calves in his silk stockings. Old Moll gave Kit a look that said he'd best not cross her, as if he'd be foolish enough to do that. They were friends, after all. Old Moll said, "Don't you worry, Mistress Jenny. You'll be safe with Widow Flanders watching over you." Kit held out the burlap sack on the blunt of his sword. "No worries, love. I'd never trifle with such a lovely flower. We'll just part you with a few baubles and be on our way." He just hoped they'd part with the baubles before Blackheart Tully shot more than the coach. He began to think that perhaps this partnering weren't in the best interests of his health or reputation. The lawyer types had plump purses, silk handkerchiefs, and fine gold watches. The bishop in Pruneface coughed up, after some additional persuasion, a fat purse and some pretty enough gold chains. When the pretty young miss plucked off her crucifix, Kit twinkled a wink at her. She cast her face down, but eyed him while clutching her corseted chest in such a way as to set his own family jewels to swelling, which was all well enough. This was when the job went fucked 6 ways from Sunday, when all that could be collected had been rounded up. Blackheart Tully said, "Mistress Flanders, I'll want your share too." She gave him a knife-blade look. "Sir, I'm just a poor widow. I've not 2 farthings to rub together." Blackheart Tully turned his pistol on her. "Now, Moll, we all know you sew your take in your skirts, so set your ripping." All vinegar in her expression, Moll pulled a small knife from between her breasts and spilled her gold, and it was a prize all right. She dropped more than a few farthings and a dozen silk handkerchiefs and gold watches in the bag, and smiled a cutting promise. Blackheart Tully was actually laughing as they rode off, as if he hadn't heard what happened to Reedy Tom when old Moll was done with him. Kit was so busy not telling Blackheart Tully what to do. They took the same route they'd taken the last time back to camp, right into the soldier's own trap. There was no way past it but through. Kit pulled his sword and got with the slashing about. He barely saw the white-faced boys he cut through. He could hear the thunk of flesh on his blade as he spent their life's blood. In all that, he couldn't be sure just what happened to Blackheart Tully. He waited outside their camp for an hour or so. Then, because what had happened earlier didn't sit right with him, he rode until he came to Guttsville and the first coach there with a light in the upper window. He let his weary horse into the stable and went to the tap room. There old Moll was, sitting by the fire, calmly sewing the rents in her skirts. As she saw him, she said, "Now there, I knew you were a gentleman." He discreetly handed her the sack and waited while she counted it. She pursed her lips when she saw he'd added a coin or so from the bishop's purse. She smiled. "Now, if you were thinking of being a real gentleman and were wanting to return Mistress Jenny's crucifix, which she got from her dear departed pa, her room's the first on the stairs." After the long night he'd had, Kit felt in the mood to celebrate being alive. He kissed old Moll's hand. Old Moll didn't blush. She did examine the cut of his long leather coat, oiled to keep off the rain. Always did love a well-dressed man. Kit winked at her and climbed up the stairs. The first door opened easily enough. Mistress Jenny was in her bed, wearing nothing but her shift and stays. Her hand flew to her sweetly bound chest. 16 strings? What are you doing here? He dangled her gold crucifix like a goodly lure. My conscience wouldn't let me keep it. Oh, she slipped out of her bed. She held up her hair so he could put it on her. He dropped Christ between her breast and stole a kiss on her soft neck. Oh, sir. She turned her head and opened her mouth to his kiss. Neither of them pretended that she was making any sort of protest. Her lips parted for him, sweet as a flower. He popped the buttons on her corset's busk until her breasts were free. He whispered against her lips, I've unleashed the horses. Fancy a ride. Her soft, sweet hand crept down and cupped him in his silk breeches in answer. The nimble hand had his laces undone in a trip. It was only as he had her skinned of her shift that he thought, what about old Moll? She pushed him back on the bed and climbed astride him. Don't worry about her. She spends most nights just dozing a little in the tap room. From where he was, he had no thought but to kiss each of her breasts in turn. And Christ for good measure, seeing as the good Lord was hanging there. Kit wasn't ashamed to say it, but Mistress Jenny taught him a thing or two or 50. Afterwards, they went downstairs and split an ale or three with old Moll, who could be quite merry when the mood was on her. She and Jenny traded back and forth a laughing tale about a merchantman in Brighton who'd hoped for a ride and received one in turn. It wasn't until Kit was some 50 miles down the road that he realized that Jenny'd lifted his purse from his breeches. Weren't much to do but laugh. Mistress Jenny had given him more than good value in exchange. He set off down the coach road looking for his next prize. Rain on Tyburn. The rain is falling on Tyburn Hill. The young man in his specially tailored pea-green suit does a jig for the crowd on the platform. He bows his last bow, cursing the hangman for a bastard. He is fitted with a cravat of something not as fine as lace. He dances another jig then. The rain continues. It falls on the crowd. It falls on the gallows. A single drop slides down the tip of the man's boot and falls into the mud below. A young woman picks pockets while the crowd watches him swing on the line. What she wipes off her cheek is not a tear. It's simply that it's raining.
I was a sailor. I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still.
The sailor. There were more money on the China Sea route, but Chris had been born upon the tide, where the Sea of Cortez met the Pacific. His mama had come across the country, the long way around. She'd been determined to make it where her man was working the hide trade in California. She hadn't told a soul that she was baking him, or they might not let her board ship. As it was, they'd almost gone down round Cape Horn. While he was growing up, she told him about the sailors running up and down the rigging to get the ice-hardened sails loose or tied up given the storm of the day. If something went wrong, she'd always tell him, "Well, Christopher, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye trying to get the ice off a sail in a blow." If he'd been fretful, she'd describe curls of blue and green ice floating by the ship like fantastic castles built by mermaids to lounge on with their pet seals. She'd say, "Christopher, the day you was born, a humpback whale and her calf was blown off starboard,
Why, I breathed so hard over such a pretty sight that when I breathed out, you popped out. Let me tell you, after that, the jig was up. Or no one on that ship that didn't know there was a baby. Chris wore his first toy, a carved piece of seal bone and a leather thong around his neck. When they got to Mission San Diego de Cala, turned out that his papa had a whole other wife. Or nothing for it, but they moved to Pueblo de Los Angeles, where his mama swore if she never set foot on another boat, it was too soon. But she could see he pined for the sea. She'd made friends with Tule, a Kanakan sailor, and asked him to teach Chris what he could. Truth be told, Mama and Tule were a bit more than friends. But Chris was the only one of Mama's children who'd been born on the tide. Should have been hard living before the mast. Skylarking on the rigging high above the deck when gentle gusts set the lines dancing about. There was no bigger sky. There was no larger estate. But where on land, below deck fumbles in the forecastle were a crime, the sea had its own law. By the time young Billy came aboard, Chris had been 10 years before the mast. Chris took him skylarking on the mainsail. As they tied the lines with clear blue sky around them until forever, Chris had said, I'll never be an officer, but I've never sailed a whaling ship, and I'll never sail any coast but this one. With one of those brilliant smiles that could sell pearls to a South Islander, Billy said, it is beautiful. And the way his English put the accent on everything. Chris thought that for once, the coast weren't the only thing that was beautiful. After that, he'd think about the way Billy's hair was a sort of raven black, all whipped around by a breeze and curls around his head. His chest a deep, wide bunk with black hair all over it. When young Billy breathed in, it felt like all the air in the world went in there. In a squall, with his varnished black tarpaulin pulled over his head, young Billy looked like Davy Jones himself come to walk the decks. Chris didn't say nothing. Billy weren't interested in forecastle fun. Chris offered in an offhand sort of way to show that there weren't nothing serious in it. And Billy said in that friendly way of his, with a wide white smile and his sun-brown face, nah, for me it's the port ladies or the right hand. Chris nodded and smiled and ate. Now all told, when he was in the San Francisco Bay, Chris preferred it when they docked in Oakland. He could step off his ship, walk 20 steps to Heinhold's first and last chance saloon, where he'd find his money pinned to the ceiling, and drink until that was gone without worrying that there was a secret trap door, and he'd find himself on his way to China. As it was, the stews of the Barbary Coast had few temptations for him. But this was Billy's first time in San Francisco, and with his ears full for months with the tales of the Barbary Coast, nothing for it but that he wanted to drink and whore his way through San Francisco. As Chris stepped ashore, he felt like he always did. The world was unsteady, and he was unsteady in it. But his best mate was headed up Pacific Avenue, which couldn't have been further from the clean, clear gusts of the sea. Chris stepped over two women slouched in the gutter singing something about a drowned girl in sunshine. He smiled as young Billy turned to look back. He nodded. They stopped at the Golden Mile. Young Billy drank deep. Chris was careful to sip his drink. He didn't want any laudanum in his whiskey. He kept the back of his head to the wall. He didn't want a hard knock, either. Later, he cursed himself. He shoulda, coulda, oughta followed young Billy when he went to take a piss. Except he kinda couldn't. Instead, he let things get screwed six ways from Sunday. He waited at their table. He smiled off all the nighttime ladies that came to take camp there. He waited. He ordered another drink to sip. He went to check, and there weren't no Billy. He asked everyone. No one was sharp-eyed enough to see him. Billy with his deep chest and eyes that could spot the Catalinas when they weren't nothing but a pimple on the ocean. It was like the world shrugged, and young Billy was gone. Chris went back to look, but found more nothing. Come end of leave, for the first time, Chris stepped back on his ship without feeling like he was being plucked free of Earth. He couldn't even feel he was leaving something behind. He climbed the rigging, and even skylarking weren't the same. He scanned the horizon for Catalina Island, and with a heavy heart sailed down the coast toward the Horn of Mexico. Rain on the Horn of Mexico. The summer monsoon cracks where the sea meets the desert sky with a flash of lightning. Great fingers rake the sky with so much fire as to sear the eye. The clouds squeeze between the rattle of thunder and give way. Rain falls not in drops, but in sheets. It falls in the ocean, it falls in the desert. It falls upon the ship, struggling on the waves. A single drop is born and lost in that fury. It falls into the ocean, and the depths swallow it.
I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that gray tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around, 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 around.
The Dam Builder. Topher didn't need the morning siren to wake him. He had the birdsong for that. Thrice-cursed creatures woke him up hours before dawn. Just when he was ready to climb a tree and ring the damn thing's chirping necks, he breathed in the wild scent of desert pine and remembered where he was. He had a full belly, he had a job, he had a place to stay. He wasn't living in the mud flats of Ragtown. He wasn't hoping and praying and crying for a job anymore in McKeeversville. He was living in one of the bunkhouses in River Camp. Sure, it was hot enough to dry a man into a husk that could float away, but it was work. Topher was a high scaler. The work he did was important. It wasn't what he'd imagined in school. He'd had his picture in the paper as the human pendulum swinging Tommy and Mac out over the canyon. He'd swung dynamite, too, a time or two. It made him feel alive, scaling the cliffs and chipping away the weathered stone, looking for the virgin rock that could bear the weight of all the water that was going to be there. He pushed out over the concrete and river and nothing and felt the vertigo of being too high for anything to get him down. That morning, Topher made himself get out of his warm bunk and head to the mess hall. Flanders was already cooking up a mound of eggs, and there was a piping hot coffee strong enough to wake a corpse. No one was quite sure how Flanders got eggs or any of the other things he cooked up, but everyone was careful not to cross him. The man made eggs taste like Christ himself spread out on a slice of toast and wielded a wicked cutting knife. Word was he'd knifed a man in St. Louis. We're back-topping his barbecue. And there were quite a few who believed it. Topher certainly did. Topher did not care. Topher drank his coffee, and he just breathed. For a good long time, it felt like it had been months since he'd been able to breathe. Sometimes it felt like he'd spent 3 years of his life between the crash and Boulder Dam, 40 feet below water, and no matter how much he kicked his feet to try and break the surface, there was always something that was ready to shove him back under. Got so he could hardly decide if he should take a piss with his right hand or his left. Out of work, living in a Hooverville in the Seattle rain. He drank his coffee and washed those kinds of thoughts away with the bitter brew. He picked up his hard-boiled hat. There weren't much to look at. Soft cloth, boiled and tar to harden. Man getting hit on the head with a rock while wearing one might take a hit, but he wouldn't break his head. He clocked in for his shift. Foreman said, "Now, men, I'd like to introduce you to Inspector Jenkins." He pointed to a tall, thin man with a pleasant enough expression. "Government, send him down to make sure we're doing everything safe and legal. So I expect you'll give him full cooperation." Foreman smiled, and there was a jagged drop from a very high space in that smile. Topher said, "Yes, sir," and "No, sir," with the rest of the workers. The six companies' corporation had promised that there would be a $1 raise if the government threw in a dollar an hour for each worker. Could be. This was the man to approve it. Could be nothing more would happen. Cofer didn't care. He went out on the cliff face. He swung out on the ropes high enough above everything and felt free. He felt like nothing could ever shove him back down under again. He flew. He was in the middle of flying when everything, really, that was everything, could have done down the hole. Inspector Jenkins was being taken out over the rope line. Man was gripping for dear life. But he wasn't born for this. He slipped and started to tumble down the steep slope. He dived down and caught the man by the ankle, and there was a hard jerk, to be sure. He hit his head against the cliff wall, but that was what the hard-boiled hat was for. Topher held on and hauled the inspector up. They dangled there. They spun. It was sort of glorious. With all the world spinning around them, the other high-scalers hauled them the rest of the way. Got to the top, and Jenkins breathed heavy for a full century. He said, "Son, you saved my life. I'd buy you a beer," but he shrugged away prohibition. Wouldn't hardly be enough, anyway. Topher pushed back his hard-boiled hat, and his head was ringing. "As long as you remember that everyone here could use a raise in your report, I'd call us even." Jenkins looked like he'd kicked a hound. Geologic reports don't have much to say about funding, but if you'll direct me to the nearest chop house, I'll see what I can do about feeding the lot of you. He widened his look to the high scalers close clustered around with their rock-dusted coated faces. "That's all of you." The men cheered. It was the best diet of Topher's life. Into the Great Divide. The ship consumes the lake. The hose sucks up gallons of water. It fills large bladders on the interior. It fills them up, but only the drops know one drip from another.
I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can.
Fly a starship. Kier was not the captain. I in Storm Z in a nebula 6 ways till shift change? No. Z wouldn't want to be the captain. Someone just promoted into the job? Translated from a mud ball into the command chair? Walking around and leaving the ship time to time? No kind of commitment. Captain thought the Rhea Isabel was his ship because he gave the commands. But Kier was the one with zero hands on the starship's nav gems. Z was the one with the umbilic connect from the back of Zir brain to the Rhea Isabella. Kier caught solar wind in the Rhea's sails. Z was decanted for this. Captain was all commanding. "Kier, 6 degrees ruby and hard port sapphire." Kier was all, "Yes, sir. No, sir." But Z's the one navving them across the universe divide. That was all Zier's sweet touch on the controls, and with Zier's mind, yes, it was. Just like Jennings down in the engine, coaxing the engine for one more shift change. Their minds slid past each other betimes. Jennings would send a lacy white thought, "Careful up there with my ship." It was valid, but Kier sent back a deep, red velvet pulse. "Ah, Jennings! Our girl loves it when we ride her this hard. Let her show us what she can do." When the radiation blow-off from the black hole played flip the X-ray skirt with an orbiting white star, tried to snap the mainsails, Z just caught the rad, "Sweet as you please." Down in the engine room, Jennings spun Zier webs and had Zier's back. That moment right then, that was what they were decanted for. Z caught that breeze, muttering, "Take that, you bastards," and slingshot them across the other side. Z reached out for Jennings, and deep in the ship where the captain couldn't even imagine, they sparked satisfied thoughts one to the other. when the Rhea Isabella reached the other side, and was all the captain giving a speech via holowave and raising a glass of synth grog. The umbilly in the back of Kier's head dried and crackled to dust. Z gasped the sudden loss of it all. Z couldn't feel the Rhea Isabella. The gems were dark. It was shift change. They'd decant a new crew for the ride home. Kier staggered out of Zir's seat. Z'd never stood before, but Gormel's legs are not. Z'd take Zir grog, unsynthed, with Jennings in the engine room. If you please. Jennings was just as lost. Z'd got Zir umbilly dust in Zir's lap. When Kier showed up in the long, low room, they'd been thrumming, webbing for a shift. Jennings had tears in all Zir's eyes. But Kier was not going to have any of that. Not now. They were finally meeting face to face. Now I know you've been all shift distilling. Jennings sighed a cloud dust of connection. It filled the air between them. Yes, Jennings filled their glasses with something sparkling and white. They leaned against each other, arms around each other. They drank to dissolution. Solar winds blow. The solar winds blow and meets with a comet that flares its tail in answer. Ice spins off into nothing, spins into the atmosphere of something distant, and there is rain that looks like fire but isn't.
Perhaps I may become a highwayman again, or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain.
The highwayman reprise. Violent moles shifted in hair of dragonfly. Z was getting full plus restless. Gentle Kieran took a 360 spin view of space in hair dragonfly. With the reclamation authorities keeping a tight watch, it wasn't as if they'd more than one shot at this. Either do it or peace out. Violent moles was about to bust when the highwayman comet appeared out of the cloud of planetary remains. Kieran caught her breath, and of all that dusty murk, a light was blazing away. Violet moles engaged her dragonfly. They followed a 2 clicks back on Violet moles' signal. They both fired grapples. Both grapples struck true, but they hadn't fully accounted for a whole hell of a lot of stuff. That bastard spun and danced. The highwayman kept on through space, grabbing up lesser ice shards in years wake. Z wasn't like any other comet they'd ever attempted. Violent moles let go, but gentle Kieran looked back to see the reclamation authorities close behind. It was 30 clicks of re-education time if they did their own grapple on them, and it wouldn't be here coming out of that. The highwayman swung back into the cloud. Trailing behind, gentle Kieran held on until they both disappeared. Icy waters. Indigo ice rotates in the sea in a grand fashion. A drop of rain, one of so many, falls in a blue-green crack. The drop drips down and the ice groans, cracks and calves off into the blue sea. They all fall, the drops and the ice, into the waves that lap on and on and on.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride.
I was a sailor. I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I was a dam builder across a river deep and wide. I fly a starship across the universe divide. I'll be back again and again and again and again and again.